Welcome to episode 96 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast.
That was me doing my impression of David Attenborough. just messing around a little bit. So today I'm going to talk about a bit of luck that I had on what was really not much more than a reconnaissance visit to a local park and a look at a few of the images that my luck resulted in. If you already listened to the Photocast Network's Focus Ring podcast episode 7, you'll already have an idea of what I'm going to talk about. It was pretty funny actually. I was just about to turn off my PC at just after 11 p.m. and my Skype phone on the PC started to ring, and I could see that it was John Arnold from the Photo Walkthrough podcast. At first I thought it was John just sort of ringing for a chat, and so after plugging in a small condenser mic, because I don't normally have my PC set up to talk, I asked if John could hear me, and then not only John, but Chris Marquardt from Tips from the Top Floor and Iberian Exparello from the Candid Frame podcast also answered, yes, we can hear you. And it turned out that the guys had agreed a time to record episode 7, and I'd not said that I'd joined because I wasn't sure if I'd be able to make it. It just so happens that I was still up and online. They all hooked up to do the recording, and they saw me online in Skype and decided to sort of rake me in, ambushed, as I think it was John said. So I'm really pleased that they did, though. It's great fun to talk with those guys as usual. And if you don't check out this podcast, you really should, as it's well worth a listen. You can find it in iTunes by searching for Focus Ring, or go to photocastnetwork.com for the various links. Anyway, as I had no time to really prepare for the impromptu recording, I decided to talk about what I was toying with as today's topic. I'll go into much more detail here, and we'll take a look at some shots too, so hopefully it'll be worth you continuing to listen. Also, if you are interested in coming to Japan for a photography workshop and to shoot some incredible, beautiful wildlife and winter scenes, then listen to the housekeeping section at the end of the podcast for details. A few weeks ago, in episode 93, I talked about the drama that unfolded before me with the Japanese green woodpecker family. During that visit, I'd heard of a place that I would be able to shoot common kingfishers. Of course, most birds are really active, gathering food for their young while they're actually feeding the young, and quite often more so in the mornings than the afternoons. Well, the fledglings would have left the nest already, and I'd been pretty busy though, with various things, and not able to visit the place that I'd heard of in the previous weeks. And even on the day that I did visit, I really couldn't get away early enough in the day, so it was the afternoon when I set out, and I arrived sometime after 1 p.m. I got to the small pond where the kingfisher apparently fished, and as I approached I saw three men and one younger man sort of standing in front of the pond, and the younger man had a camera set up on a tripod trained on a rock, and that was really just a few meters into the pond over the small fence that they have to keep people out. And the three older guys were just sort of standing around. They had compact digital cameras and binoculars, and they were obviously interested in the birds, but not quite as set on getting a good photo as the younger guy. And I walked up and sort of said hello and asked if there was any chance of seeing the kingfisher, if this was the place. And they replied that it was the right place, but the kingfisher wasn't around. I heard that there'd been some 18 or so people there all morning waiting for one to show, but they'd had no luck and saw no kingfishers. I figured so much, as the young will have flown the nest by now. But still, you know, it was good to know that people were still turning up and sort of trying to catch the kingfisher on film or on the digital sensor. Even the young would still be in the area, and, you know, they still need to eat, right? So, you know, a little bit disappointing, but really my main objective was to see if this was a possible venue for some shots next spring. And I was really just hoping for a little bit of luck that I might be able to see one, but it didn't look as though that was going to be the case. The location itself is about 30 minutes from my apartment, so I really hadn't got a lot to lose by coming down to take a look. The three men decided to leave too, and, you know, I took a, you know, well, they went off to sort of have a look around the park, but I stayed for a moment more, sort of trying to figure out what to do. I'd extended the legs of my tripod and set it down on the floor while we spoke, but I decided too that I was probably out of luck, and I started to retract the legs and get ready to leave. And I now knew, though, you know, where to come in the future, and I'd heard which rocks the kingfisher likes to sit on and fish, and I was really sort of ready for better luck next time, or so I thought. As I turned to leave, I literally saw like a blue streak flash behind me, going towards the end of the pond where I'd heard that the kingfisher rarely goes. I walked around to where the blue streak was heading, and sure enough, sitting on a rock was a common kingfisher. The three guys were gone now, but the young man with his camera trained on the other rock was still there. I whispered that the kingfisher was there as I passed, and then I realized as he didn't move that he had earphones in. So I tapped him on the shoulder and pointed to the kingfisher, and his face sort of lit up and he followed me down as we tried to get closer. So one thing that I've learned in recent years as I shoot more wildlife is that it's always best to shoot what you can when you can, and then start to push your luck as you move closer. So I kept my distance at first and shot a few frames of the kingfisher. The problem at first was that there was a blue hose pipe from some like construction or something running diagonally across the frame while shooting from this position. But it would have been better than nothing at all had the kingfisher flown away at this point. He didn't know, so as I walked across the grass area that I was standing in, and set up a little bit closer, I decided to place a bush between me and the bird for two reasons. The first is so that I could hide myself to some extent, but I'd just passed through an open space in full sight of the kingfishers, so, and he hadn't flown away, so I guess that, you know, really the main reason left is that if we take a look actually at image number 1491, we can see that not only the kingfisher is standing on the rock there, but also the effect of putting that bush between me and the subject. I think the green adds a nice touch, breaking up the mainly brown tones with some nice spring green there. It also forms a base from which the boulder can enter the frame, and so I'm relatively pleased with the effect. The other thing here is that the right side of the frame, in comparison to the relatively bright left side, gets gradually darker, also adding some balance to the image, I feel. All of the images we're going to look at today were shot with exactly the same equipment and settings. I was using my 5D and the 600mm f4 behemoth of a lens, with the 1.4x extender attached, giving me an actual focal length of 840mm. The kingfisher was relatively still, but even so, I didn't want to get much slower than 1/100th of a second if I can help it, so I raised the ISO to 500 to achieve that shutter speed. I've gone into the details about this many times before, so I won't mention it again today, but basically I was shooting in manual mode, as the camera's meter would have not been able to handle the dark background without a lot of exposure compensation. In this shot, I had positioned the kingfisher in the top left-hand third intersection using the rule of thirds. This gave the bird some space to look into. In the next shot, image number 1492, you can see that I also tried the same composition, but in portrait mode instead of horizontal landscape mode. This actually helps to give us more of an idea of the height of the boulder on which the kingfisher was perched. And he's now sort of staring out of the frame much more, but I think that this works relatively well. Note too that I've cropped the top and the bottom of this shot, as it seemed a little bit too tall without that. And along the bottom, that blue hosepipe that I was talking about earlier was sort of creeping in that little 5% or so that I can't see, in the viewfinder. This kingfisher really seemed to be settled down for a while. I'd shot 20 frames or so as I moved closer to get to this point, and he didn't appear to be in a hurry to go anywhere. It was around this point that a man with a small son, maybe he was about five, six years old, came up behind me, and the man was trying to tell his son where the bird was. "It's that blue thing on the boulder over there," he was saying, pointing to the bird. It didn't look as though it was about to start fishing, the kingfisher, that is. And with it being relatively dark and the water dirty, I didn't think that I was going to get much chance of a good shot of it sort of diving, even if I had moved into a better position to be able to do so. So I turned and offered my binoculars for the man to show the boy the kingfisher more closely. And as I did, I could see him there pointing, and the man frowned and sort of started to apologize. He obviously thought that I was turning around to tell him to shut his son up, as he was voicing the fact that he couldn't see the bird quite loudly. I said that that wasn't a problem, and I handed the binoculars over. The boy still couldn't see the bird, because it's pretty hard. If you've ever tried this, it's quite difficult to point binoculars at something for someone else to look through, as they almost always move away from the subject the moment you take them away from your eye. I clamped my Wimberley head tripod head down so that it wouldn't move, and had the man lift his boy up to the viewfinder of the camera, and he finally smiled and said that he saw the kingfisher and walked away happy with his dad. Back to my shooting after a minute or so, doing this, and the kingfisher moved from one boulder to another, enabling me to get a slightly different view, which we can see in image number 1493. He's facing us more now, and I've placed him along the right third line now so that he is still looking into the frame. I find that it's often important to give your shots balance by allowing them space to look into. Your subject should have some kind of space to look into. Of course, as with all rules, it's not a hard and fast one. You can give your image some suspense or drama by having the subject look straight out of the side of the shot, but I don't think that would have worked here. In addition to the fact that I was carrying binoculars, I'm going to give away the fact that I'm really turning into a bit of a birder by noting that we can tell that this kingfisher is one of this year's fledglings by the fact that he still has orange feet. I learned this initially in the park from a guy, one of the three gentlemen that was there earlier. They came back and I was showing them the bird on my LCD, a little later that is, and I heard this from there and I confirmed it in one of my books at home that I use for IDing Japanese birds. As this kingfisher gets older, his feet will become a much deeper orange, almost red. Finally, I wanted to look at one more shot, the last one that I uploaded from this literal 10 minutes shoot, which is image number 1494. Here we can see that the kingfisher has turned facing his right again, so I've recomposed him to have him in the left of the frame. I'd snuck a little bit closer now, so I've got the subject even larger in the frame, though the rock is a little bit further away than the one that I was shooting, the kingfisher on the first few photos that we looked at. With wild birds, I don't like to get too close, as I don't shoot from a blind, and if I was to make him scared, he might feel threatened and fly away, when he could have actually caught himself a fish for dinner, and I would be sort of you know, altering nature a little bit too much if I was to start getting really intrusive. I was starting to think that I might, you know, be able to get a little bit closer though, when what I'd been fearing happened. The boulder on which the bird is perched is actually right next to a series of stepping stones that cross the pond to where I'm standing. And indeed, a few, maybe 30 minutes earlier, I'd actually passed along, gone and walked across those stepping stones on my own way into the park. Well, an elderly lady and a middle-aged lady, probably her daughter, walked into the park across these stepping stones, right in front of the kingfisher, so he flew away, ending my 10-minute lucky streak. I am pleased with the shots that I got in this short time, though they're not really prize winners. Very sharp and, you know, great shots, but, you know, to really capture the beauty of these birds, you need to get them actually jumping into the water, catching fish, or in pairs, you know, things like this. Just a straight shot like this is nice to look at, but not a prize winner, as I say. I'm all set to go back though next spring now. I know where the location is, and I'm hopefully going to be able to capture some images like this, you know, when I do go back, probably next spring. In addition to wanting to share these images with you today, I really wanted to revisit a topic that I spoke about in some length in episode 11 and on the Focus Ring podcast last week. And, you know, briefly, I've mentioned this a few other times, but we often go to great lengths to get to locations to shoot to images. You know, granted, on this day, I'd really taken hardly any time, just 30 minutes, a nice steady drive over after lunch, not going out of my way at all. But quite often we do plan for a long time, we prepare and spend a lot of time and sometimes money getting to locations in the hope of shooting some stunning images. But especially when it comes to nature, you know, such things as wildlife or landscape work, when we have no control over the actions of our subjects or the weather conditions, for example, we're not always guaranteed to get the shot that we want. We may come away with something else equally interesting or beautiful by being resourceful and resilient, which I've also covered in episode 59, but to get what we want, it often comes down to luck. If you're not in that place, if you don't make your way somewhere, obviously no amount of luck will get you the shot. But no matter how waterproof we think our plans are, without that extra bit of luck sometimes that makes that bird that has eluded 18 photographers for an entire morning just fly by and sit on a rock for us for 10 minutes while we photograph it, you know, it's just not going to happen. It was also just sheer luck that I turned around when I did. If I hadn't turned around at that precise moment, I'd never have seen the kingfisher fly by. I was standing looking at the main part of the pond. This is, after all, where everyone had told me the bird would prefer to fish. And I guess this is another tip. You know, great advice is good to sort of get advice from people around you, people that know. But don't let that blind you to other possibilities. There are hundreds of plastic experts out there, so let's stay alert ourselves and govern our own actions based on that, our own intuition, as well as what we can learn from others. So a little on the short side today, and I hope that if you did tune into the Focus Ring podcast, that I've been able to make it worth your listening in here as well. If you haven't caught up on the Focus Ring podcast, I suggest that you subscribe right away. In iTunes, you can just go in and search for Focus Ring, I'll put a link to the Photocast Network website in the show notes, but it's basically just photocastnetwork.com, and it has the links for iTunes there and the XML feed if you want to subscribe in a different podcast aggregator. There are usually up to 4 Photocast Network members discussing all things photography and having a bit of a laugh at the same time, so well worth a listen. Of course, all the members, plus a fair few others listed there, have our own podcasts, and the quality of them all is very high. So it's a great place to find other photography-related podcasts as well if you're running a little bit dry. A quick reminder that there is now just 1 week left to get your entry in for the movement assignment. All entries should be shot after Monday the 25th of June up until the end of the assignment on August the 5th, 2007. You'll be able to upload your images to the assignment album on mbpgalleries.com until the end of the 5th of August, just about anywhere in the world, so no need to worry about time zones. For more details, take a listen to episode 92, and please do check the rules and guidelines in the assignment forum at martinbaileyphotography.com before uploading your images. Or image, I should say. You're only allowed to do one entry per person per assignment. So one other thing before we close is that I wanted to touch on something that I also mentioned in the Focus Ring podcast towards the end, which is the possibility of an MBP workshop in Hokkaido next January or February. I've been toying with this idea for a long time now and really not yet put any feelers out. But basically, we'll be talking around 4 to 5, maybe longer, depending on how things plan out. But maybe 4 to 5 days in Hokkaido, which is the large island at the top, the northernmost part of Japan. I'm targeting January or February because this is the coldest time and the best time for catching not only the ice floes on the sea, but the Stellar Eagles and the white-tailed eagles, as well as the beautiful red-crowned cranes and hooper swans. Basically there'll be deer, there maybe if we're lucky we'll see foxes and even owls. But we'll definitely take some landscape work, photography as well, and all of it will be in conditions well below freezing though. I've not looked into the Fahrenheit settings in preparation, but the last time I was there, we were shooting landscape photography at minus 20 degrees centigrade or Celsius. So you'll need very good harsh weather clothing and boots, things like that. But the preparation itself, obviously, you won't be alone. I'll be giving all the advice necessary for what to prepare for, and also how to keep your equipment not only safe but functioning in these conditions. What I'll do is, as we move forward, I'll write up a full list of what you need to bear in mind and what you'd need to buy before coming to Japan and then over to Hokkaido. Obviously, we will do interactive workshops and training as well, either in the field or if weather conditions mean that we have to prepare verbally and brush up on things before we go out and then just really do it in the bad weather or the harsh weather, and then sort of get back and compare notes. I don't know. Hopefully the weather will not be so sort of harsh that we can't even talk and get some interaction going in the field. If that did happen, obviously we'd have to sort of go back and do that at the hotel, but basically that's again in the lap of the gods. So that's the sort of thing that we'd have to play by ear, but I will definitely be preparing lots of great sort of educational stuff before we go. And it will be a really good sort of all-round, awesome photographic learning experience for all that attend. You will be responsible for getting yourself to Tokyo, in Japan, obviously. And that means that you'll need to fly in if you don't live in Japan. And then the workshop will probably be all-inclusive from the flight from Tokyo to Hokkaido. And it's an hour or so's flight there, and then also the accommodation, travel, all the rest of the trip. I'm hoping to be able to sort of bundle that all into one price. I'm not sure at the moment how much it's going to cost, and there's a lot more planning really to go before I can calculate any of this even, but all of that's going to take a lot of my time to work through too. So before I really get into that much further, For now, I'm really just interested to hear from you if you're interested in such a workshop. With absolutely no obligation, please drop me a line at workshop@martinbaileyphotography.com with your, you know, just put the word workshop in the title of your email, and I'll put you on a yet small but growing list of people to keep informed about this. And if the numbers reach critical mass, which I'd say is probably going to be when we think that we'd need to hire a bus to get around, we're probably talking about a minimum of around 15 people. But if we get to that point, then we'll make this happen. And I look forward to hearing from anyone that's interested in this. But for now, thanks for listening, and we'll talk again next week. Have a great week, whatever you're doing, and stay lucky. Bye-bye.
Photocastnetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. Photocastnetwork.com.